Hello, horror hounds, and welcome to the It Slays podcast. I am not your humble host, Rowan, which means one of two things. You're either listening to the superior show on the feed, Now Slaying, hosted by the wickedly talented, the funny, the handsome, Colton Simpson, or there has been a technical issue with the main show, and Rowan is hiding behind me once again to explain what went wrong, or in this case, what went right. As longtime fans of the show know, I've been brave enough to admit that I'm not a big fan of the original Ginger Snaps. And for this incredibly brave take, there has been a very public, long-standing beef between myself and one Willow Caitlin McClay. Maybe you've heard of her. And she was supposed to be on the show this week to duke it out with me, but looks like you'll never get to hear it. I'm not going to say whether my people got to her or maybe a little computer virus worked its way into her system, allowing for only the first 20 minutes of a nearly two-hour-long discussion to be recorded, or that maybe the karmic debt of being on the wrong side of an early 2000s teenage Canadian werewolf flick finally caught up to her. But whatever it was, Willow's take on Ginger Snaps 2 never made the air. But guess whose did? Mine. That's right, for International Women's Month, Rowan made the bold call to not say, yes, women, and instead say, less women, and completely cut Willow out of this episode. Sure, maybe it was due to a technical error during the recording. Or maybe, if you come at the king, you best not miss. I'll give y'all a moment to think about it. Of course, I'm just playing around. Willow did join us, and we had a great civil discussion on Ginger Snaps 1 and 2, but we only realized days later that her program only recorded the first 20 minutes of our discussion. So Rowan has been working hard behind the scenes to try and Frankenstein together this episode, but if there are a few abrupt cuts or awkward transitions, please forgive us this week, or simply blame Jill because it could also be just as likely that she just spaced out mid-recording. So that's all for now. Please enjoy our episode of Ginger Snaps 2 Unleashed, sadly without Willow, but I'm sure she'll join us again soon in the future. Okay, Rowan, take it away.
We're going to expand our weekly video segment to take you into the back shelves of your local video store, back where it says horror videos and where kids are devouring some awful films that we call the video nasties.
Are you freebasing inquiring minds want to know?
I have to break free from this culture of mechanical reproductions and the thick incrustations dying on the surface.
Fuck the prime time, bitch.
Omelette in a fletch.
The pain, I can assure you, will be exquisite. As for our deaths, come with me and be immortal.
We have such sights to show you.
We've got to return some videotapes.
Hello, horror hounds, and welcome to an unleashed episode of It Slays podcast. I'm your humble host, Rowan.
I'm the infinite darkness, Mike.
I'm Colton.
And it's Jill.
And we are back for another one. Let's get into what have we been consuming? What have we been watching? What have we been listening to? What have we been reading? Just generally, what have you been doing?
Okay, so I've been getting into, and we've been chatting about it, these like pink films. The Japanese movies, they're like short. I don't know what to call them. Like, they're kind of sexy, violent, like exploitation movies that were like very popular over a couple of decades. I'm becoming obsessed anyway. So I recently watched two of those. It's essentially both of them were like S&M gay porn with an absurdist twist. One of them was called Bondage Ecstasy, which I really enjoyed. And the other one was called Muscle. Like, I totally, you know, if that's y'all's thing, you should definitely check them out. They're very sexy, very extreme, nice one-hour movies if you're looking for something to squeeze in, but, like, you don't have...
Squeeze in?
Know, squeeze in, squeeze in, squeeze out, cut off.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Anyway, they're something, let me tell you. Yeah, so I've been kind of on that kick, and I do actually have a couple more lined up to watch in the next couple days, so stay tuned next week when
I thought you were going to say the next couple hours.
No, oh no, no, listen, I can't do that to myself tonight. I have to go to bed.
You're wore out.
I am actually wore out. Yeah, you're not wrong. So other than those movies, I have actually watched a couple of other films. Oh, and a TV show. So first of all, Ro, this might be of interest to you. I didn't tell you that I was watching it because I wanted to tell you now. I watched the first few episodes of X-Men 97.
Oh, yeah. I haven't watched it yet. I'm excited.
Listen, I'm dyed-in-the-wool, like, hardcore X-Men fan, and X-Men the Animated Series was just, like, one of my favorite shows growing up. So, oh, yeah, we are fully on that train. I think there's two episodes out now, and I cried during one of them, and... I'm like, God, this got me.
I'm interested to see what happens with it. There's like a bunch of controversy because like before they even released it, they fired the director.
Yeah, the like showrunner. I know I saw that. I followed him online. I didn't even know he was involved with the show. I was just like, oh, this person's really attractive and smart. I'm going to follow them. And I'm like, oh, wait, you do the X-Men show. Okay. And now I'm like, oop, that explains why I haven't seen him in a while. But anyway, yeah, it's I'm really enjoying it so far. It's very in tune with the original series, but yeah, it's just, you gotta watch it, you gotta watch it. So I also saw last night, actually, Immaculate, starring Sweeney. Yeah, so that was fun. That was a fun movie. Anybody else see it? Yeah.
Mm-mm. Yeah, by the time people are listening to this, there's gonna be a Now Slaying already up for a week. Ooh. Of me and Colton talking about it.
Yeah, I felt that visually it was very flat for the most part. There was a couple moments I was like, ooh, okay, let's pull on this thread a bit more, and it just didn't. But I found it really fun. Of the few, like, horror movies I've gone to see in theaters in the last like year and a half, it was probably one of my favorite ones, because like, I don't know, I just feel like some of the new movies lately that get theatrical releases here are like kind of, you know, whatever. But yeah, I thought she was fantastic, and I love that this was like a passion project for her, and she's just like throws everything into it, and I really enjoyed it.
I'm so glad.
And guess what else? I did see one other thing, actually, and that was the Lesbian Muscle Mommy film starring Ms. Kristen Stewart, Love Lies Bleeding. Come on, I know I'm not the only one to watch that.
No. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, I saw Love Lies Bleeding. I thought it was pretty great overall, especially like the first two thirds, I would say. Like, I very much liked like that grimy 80s aesthetic. I thought Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien, I think is her name. I think this is like one of her first big roles, and she was excellent in it. I will say, like, for me personally, it got like a little bit messy in like the third act, and I found it almost felt like a Coen Brothers movie where there was like a lot of coincidences and like kind of strained credibility a little bit. I don't have a huge issue with like that moment of a metaphor or magic realism, whatever you want to point to, like right at the end, like a lot of people, but it was just kind of like, it got a little bit messy, I'd say, in the third act, but I still thought it was really good. I really enjoyed it.
I loved the aesthetic. Listen, that soundtrack, I was like, literally having this like kind of neon, scorchy, 80s, sweaty, like gym scene, and then having Nona Hendrix's transformation come on was like amazing. I was like, this is literally already, if the rest of the movie is like complete garbage, I was like, it's 2.5 stars just for this.
Just for the needle drop?
Yeah, nice. You know I love a needle drop. You know I love it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I literally want that to be my job. I should have like went to school for needle drop supervisor.
I really want to see it. I'll have to wait till it comes out. In Nova Scotia, it's playing in one theater.
And, really?
Yeah. And like, I'm pretty sure, like, I think it leaves next week. Like, it played a week, and then it's just leaving.
That's weird,
Barbie,
because I know you
playing?
Just saw... Oh, sorry, go
sorry,
ahead, Joe.
Go
what
ahead.
Did you say? No, I was just going to say that's weird, because I know we saw Immaculate, and I just figured Love Lies Bleeding would have a bigger distribution plan than Immaculate,
right.
I guess. But yeah.
No, at my theaters, like, Barbie and Oppenheimer are still playing.
Still.
Yes.
They just came back for the Oscars, and they're not leaving.
Yeah, so I was just wondering if that was, like, a universal thing.
Oppenheimer did come back here last week, I think, yeah. So
my theater's still playing it, like, my local one.
What have you been watching, if you haven't seen Love Lies Bleeding, Rowan?
Yeah, I actually, this week, actually watched stuff. Last week, I was, like, didn't really watch anything.
Yeah, you dropped the ball, man.
Yeah, so I caught up a little bit. Even though I didn't meet my goal, I've still, like, you know, just every a couple days, like, still picking away at the Oscar movies from this year. So I watched Rustin, which I thought was really good. I thought, and like, now I've seen all the lead actor performances, like, I actually thought this was the best one. Coleman Domingo is just amazing in this. The movie's not great is like the real issue. It's like pretty, you know, like paint by numbers, just like Netflix biopic. And it's only elevated because of like Coleman Domingo. But it's super interesting. You know, if you don't know anything about Rustin, like he's kind of, you know, kind of this lost gay icon of the civil rights movement. And then I also finally got my hands on Four Daughters, which is a documentary that was nominated that was like so hard for me to find because the only people that have rights to it is Kino. And basically, even if I signed up for Kino, I had to live in the States. If you used the VPN, it knew it. It just, it was like,
oh, really?
Oh, wow.
It was like super hard, and they still have it. So, like, it's really hard to watch. And this was this was super interesting. It's basically about a mother and her. She's got four daughters. Two of them were recruited by ISIS. They got radicalized and recruited. But it's very much like, you know, it's almost like it'd be directed by Nathan Fielder, because basically they hire actors to play out scenes that are too traumatic for the actual family that like do in front of the camera, but like they'll be in the room and they'll stop the scene and be like, no, this is what the guy said, this is like, you're doing it wrong. So it's kind of like a weird, yeah, just like an experimental documentary. I thought it was pretty good. It was, you know, pretty traumatic. You know, when you're done it, you're like, oh Jesus. And then, you know, very much on the same kind of seriousness level, I watched Irish Wish on Netflix, Lindsay Lohan's new Irish rom-com.
Of course.
Who wouldn't watch
Why
that?
Not?
You should have watched that for our, what's it called? St. Paddy's Day episode.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is a Lindsay Lohan Netflix rom-com. It's, I'm pretty sure it's written by artificial intelligence. Like, none of it really makes any sense. The dialogue doesn't really make sense. And it's kind of a shame because, like, Lindsay Lohan is, like, very charismatic. And, like, if she was given good material, I think would be really, yeah, really good. But you know what? Get the bag, I guess. Netflix is paying her to do these, like, Hallmark.
But she deserves better.
She needs to pull a Sydney Sweeney and, like, get a passion project and, like, just fully get everyone on board herself.
Mm-hmm. Were her scenes sponsored by Seat Geek in this movie? Because the last movie I saw her in was Mean Girls as a cameo, and it's like literally like, this moment is sponsored by SeatGeek, and they have Lindsay Lohan literally read the advertising.
So that's awesome. That might have made it even more interesting. I was gonna say ones that we saw, I won't say anything about because there's episodes out about them. Me and Colton saw Imaginary. There's an episode already out about that. And we saw the new Ghostbusters movie as well as Immaculate. There's a double feature episode out with our thoughts on those. I finally saw Dune. I was late to the party. Absolutely loved it. I thought it was great. I probably did it backwards where I watched Dune 2 and then I rewatched Dune 1. Like afterwards, and I still actually think I like the second one a little better.
I think most people I think I might slightly prefer the first, but
me too. Yeah, actually I prefer
oh
the
really
first. Yeah,
okay, cool.
But I feel like a lot of people are preferring the second one.
Absolutely. Yeah,
the visuals on the second one are just like incredible. And true. Yeah, like anyone listening that's like waiting for it to come to streaming, like you have to see it in the theater. Like it's like really, really breathtaking what he does. And I've always said, like, that's just, it's my kind of sci-fi. It's just very, very melancholy and just serious, I guess. Then I watched some, like, feel-good comedy stuff. I don't know how well they aged, but I rewatched Waiting, which is like
one of my favorites.
My all-timers. I guess I was in a Justin Long mood. But yeah, I mean, that's...
You should be in an Ilana Ubach mood, but anyway. You know she's the best part of that movie, her and her bush.
Yeah, she's the mom in the new Ted TV show.
And in Euphoria.
Yeah, yeah.
She's the wine mom.
But yeah, that's always fantastic. And then I rewatched Zach and Miri make a porno, which I also love. Jason Mewes.
Classic.
Awesome in that.
Tracy Lords.
Yes. Everything. Oh, it's just it's just a classic. What else did I see? I saw Origin, which I was pretty mid on. It was bizarre. Like, everything about it wasn't very well done. I felt like I was watching, like, a little higher budget TV movie. Like, I just thought the acting was flat. The story, I just thought, was very muddled. I know about the book. I've never read it. But it's, like, to me, it's one of those books that's, like, pretty complicated to turn into, like, a narrative movie. And, yeah, I thought it was fine. It was all right.
I think you're the only person to go from discussing sex comedies of, like, the mid-2000s to Ava DuVernay's Origin back to back.
Listen, man, I'm just knocking them off the list. I watched another Disney movie. I'm really trying to get these Disney movies watched. I won't talk about it today, but I am in the middle of watching Tarzan, which...
Hell fucking yeah.
And you stopped?
Yeah, I mean, Disney movies, I just don't really care. I watch them, like, before I go to bed. If I fall asleep, I'm like, oh, I'll pick it up later. But I watched Pocahontas, because I had never seen that, and I don't know, I didn't think it was very good. I didn't really like the music in it. Like, I thought the music was not my thing. I did think it was the most, like, colorful, like, animation-wise. It was pretty up there for, like, when's that, 90s it came out?
Yeah. Would you say that the soundtrack would have been better had it more Phil Collins? Like, the entirety of the Tarzan soundtracks?
Mm.
Fuck, so good.
I don't like
Phil
Collins.
He went so hard. He didn't have to.
So, that wouldn't do anything for him. That's probably what's taking me so long with Tarzan, is I'm just not a Phil Collins guy.
How can you not like Phil Collins?
I'm sorry. And then, I think really, yeah, the last two I watched were Ghostbusters Afterlife, because we did the second one, and I had never seen Ghostbusters Afterlife, and I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. I'm a huge Ghostbusters fan and had enough nostalgia, and I thought it was a pretty good, like, blockbuster popcorn watch. I had fun with it. And then the last thing I watched Good Morning Vietnam, which I had never seen before. This was just one of those, like, it was the middle of the night, I had it on my to watch list on Disney Plus, and I was like, sure, why not? And I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, Robin Williams is always charming. The cast is, like, wild in that one. Like, there's so many, like, just great actors in it that play, like, small parts or, like, semi-big parts. And, yeah, I thought it was interesting. Obviously, I think it's probably, you know, like Pocahontas, there's some complicated things going on with that story. But I think, the heart of it, just Robin Williams being charming, it worked for me. So, yeah, that's all I've really been doing. I won't make people listen to me talk about watching Big Brother Canada, so...
please don't.
Yeah. Yeah, how about you, Jill? Let's pass it on to you.
All right. Well, I'm going to start with books. First of all, I just read Dirty Blonde, The Diaries of Courtney Love. It's kind of adjacent to the journals that Kurt Cobain has published. Yeah, so it's kind of like that, but Courtney Love. I'm a big fan of her. I know not a lot of people are. I'm a big fan of her band, Hole. And, you know, she gets a lot of hate, a lot of criticism all the time. But one thing I really like is that we get to see, like, the poetry that she's written. Like, she's really a modern poet. And I love the way she mixes, like, ethereal things with, like, really gritty, nasty shit. You know, things no one wants to talk about, and then, like, really girly things. And I love, like, the mishmash of that. And I think she's brilliant and of the same caliber of a poet as Kurt Cobain. So I really enjoyed that. It's good to read if you are already, like, a seasoned Courtney Love fan and know something about her life, because there's no context. You're just looking at, like, you know, parts of songs or like little poems or lyrics or pictures, and that they don't really tell you what it is. So it is like, it feels deeply personal. And I love that. I think that's really cool. So I've been meaning to get my hands on that book since like 2006 when it came out, but it's really hard to come by. Mm-hmm. So I had to go online and buy it secondhand. So like, if you're looking to get your hands on it, there's an idea. I also read the book I started talking about on the last episode, The Serpent and the Wings of Night. So I finished it. It's kind of like a mixture of Hunger Games, but with vampires and a little spice. I like the writing style. It was fun. So if you're into that sort of thing. Another thing I read, a little palate cleanser, is the Trick or Treat 10th Anniversary comic. Really beautiful art, fun read. I love Trick or Treat, and it has like the whole story of Trick or Treat in graphic novel form. It's a very like comic based novel, like it works so well, and it's just like rewatching the movie but with really, really cool art. So highly recommend. And I know that the 10th anniversary version comes with four extra stories, so there are four other stories like based, you know, on Halloween night, you know, kind of like an anthology, and that was cool. Sam appears in all of them, and you get some like Sam lore, so you figure out where he comes from. I'm not going to spoil it, but it was really fun, so highly recommend that one. Okay, and then I'm going to talk about a show I'm watching. So I think your friend Colton, was it Steven or Mark, who mentioned for us to watch The Dark Side of the Ring?
Oh, I can't remember who specifically mentioned it, but yeah, after the Iron Claw when yeah. we were discussing it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been watching a bit of that. It's kind of heavy. You know, wrestling is so sad. Like, the real lives of wrestlers is crazy. So I've only watched four episodes. Yesterday I watched the Von Erich episode, which is what Iron Claw is based on, and it's even more grim.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah, more grim than the movie. But, you know, it was cool to see the one surviving brother tell the story of, you know, his family. And you can see, like, he's really trying to live his life because, I don't know, I feel like he really knows, like, the cost of a life from seeing it, like, wasted on his brothers. Every single one of them ended up dying, you know, and just, like, kind of the result of being hyper focused on wrestling. So yeah, it's cool to see him. He's like retired and living in Hawaii and just enjoying life. It's kind of really sentimental, and like see his sons who are grown up now. You see them as children in the movie at the end, but they're grown up and they're like, they look just like their uncles. It's wild. So highly recommend Dark Side of the Ring. The other episode I really liked was the one about Bret Hart. I think he's a really cool wrestler, so I like his story. He's Canadian, and his family had like a carny bear that they kept like on property, and they would fight it. And I think that's the coolest shit ever.
Jesus Christ.
And actually, I did some Googling of this bear, and it was like owned by carnies. And I think it died in Newfoundland, or like its owner died in Newfoundland. You know, it was like a circus they were traveling with, and they ended up getting into, like, they hit a moose. That's what it was. The most Newfoundland shit ever. They hit a moose, and the guy who owned the bear died, and nobody knows what happened to the wrestling bear. But yeah, real thing.
Like the only bear in Newfoundland. I mean, I know there's some, but a lot of people say they're not here. But
we got polar bears. We got all the polar bears. But anyway.
In Newfoundland?
In northern Newfoundland.
I mean, yeah, they float across on the ice, I guess.
Oh, yeah. We get them. They come over from your home, Labrador.
I know. And, that's why I was saying, wait, why do you guys have polar bears?
Because I live basically on, you know, I can see Labrador from, like, the coast. So, like, you know.
Gotcha.
Basically the same people. But yeah, besides that, I also want to bring up a little flex that I might be going to WrestleMania next month. So real dirtbag territory. I'm on my wrestling journey and I love it. And I want to see Rhea Ripley so bad. She's so fucking hot. Anyway, moving on. We talked about Dune 2. Love it. I don't really have anything else to say about it. But actually, I do have a little embarrassing story. So I went into that movie kind of high. Shocker. And I apparently don't know who Christopher Walken is.
So no.
Just boot me off the podcast right now before I incriminate myself further. But every time he popped up, and they did like really land on his face a lot for too long. Like it was goofy, right? I'm not the only one who thought that.
Well, he's the one, in my opinion, that kind of sticks out like a sore thumb, but it's because I know Christopher Walken, and he sounds like Christopher Walken, like, at least half the time in the movie, but...
I don't think I know any movies. I don't think I've ever seen a movie with Christopher Walken before. I need to, like, look it up. But anyway, I was cracking the fuck up watching this, and I was with my friend, he was cracking up, so I thought, like, we were thinking the same thing. Until afterwards. And I was like, that's the guy who plays Robert California in The Office, right? And he's like, no. So it's still funny to me because I still think he looks like that. But anyways, different guy, apparently.
Have you not seen Pulp Fiction?
I have, but I don't remember him from that.
I mean, he just has a very well-known scene in that movie. I guess there's a lot of well-known scenes in that
Pulp
movie.
I love Pulp Fiction, but I still thought this guy was from The Office, and I was cracking up. I was like, what's he doing here?
Also, in one of the greatest works of director David Fincher, Madonna's Bad Girl video.
Oh, shit. That's important.
I haven't seen that
one. It is important.
I missed that.
You should.
Fincher one.
How dare you?
I love Dune 2. I did the thing where I haven't watched the first one in a while, and I went there, and I didn't know what the fuck was going on. So I was like, I need to rewatch the first one. So, like, if you haven't seen
also,
Dune
you were
2
high.
Yet. Also, I was high. I love those little fucking sandworms.
You're like,
oh,
yo, what's
so
up
bad.
With this talking baby? This is wild.
Actually... No, actually, the talking baby took me out. It scared me.
Yeah, no
it
shit.
But anyways, check back on Halloween, because I promise you, I'm going to turn my dog into a sandworm for Halloween.
Nice.
Or I'm going to have her riding a sandworm. We'll see, we'll see.
Keep him away from Colton.
I know.
Come on. I bought the popcorn bucket as a meme. Do we have to go over this again?
And also,
just so you know, I didn't send the group chat the actual person fucking the popcorn bucket out of respect for all of you.
Thank you.
But you did post the picture of the guy with his dick out.
Anyway. Moving on. .org.
In the theater. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, no, yeah. I know. That was that Love Lies Bleeding. I posted that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was censored. I mean, you know, and then A24 literally retweeted it for marketing for the movie.
That is so funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Apart from that, I rewatched Rowan's favorite movie ever, and that's Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship
Jesus
of the Ring.
Christ. Didn't
solid
you just
watch.
Didn't you just
Thank
rewatch
you.
Those?
I rewatch
you
it all
watch
the fucking time. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually like my Easter tradition. Like every Easter, I don't know why. I think it's because like when I was a teenager, Lord of the Rings would be on like all Easter weekend, you know? And I would just watch it all the time on Easter, eat Easter chocolate. And that's all I want to do this Easter. So I'm going to rewatch the whole fucking thing. Love it. And while I was watching it, I was building these little Lego characters that I got at the Lego store. So I did Arwen and Aragorn, and my husband, he did Smeagol and Bilbo. So it
wouldn't
was
they
fun.
Just be like minifigs or something though? Is there
They're,
even that much
yeah.
building involved?
There, actually, it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
in my head,
head
a minifig,
yeah,
it's like you put the head on the body.
Oh,
you're
no.
like, oh, it took me so long to build this.
Yeah. No. It takes, there's a booklet involved.
Okay, all right.
And
all right.
It took me a lot longer than my husband. And that's because I grew up poor and didn't have Legos. And that's what I'm sticking to as my excuse. Anyways, I just think hobbits are Newfoundlanders. And I highly identify as a hobbit. And, you know, what we need is a few good taters. That's all I gotta say about that. And lastly, and I know that we were kind of talking about this earlier, I watch Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV. I know, Colton, you watched it too, right?
I did, yep.
Did you want to talk about it?
I mean, I could talk about it. Yeah, I think it's a decent documentary, but essentially to me, when I was watching it, obviously there's just so many failings of like the entire like production pipeline for this sort of shit to happen, which obviously, if you haven't seen the documentary, it's about essentially child predators being on a lot of these Nickelodeon shows, and basically all the adults around them just completely failing them and having them like basically preyed upon and, you know, leading to kind of like the ruination of their lives. So it's not exactly a very fun documentary, but I was just constantly like shocked by like how shitty the parents were, or how shitty the producers were, or how shitty just everyone involved is. Like, yeah, sure, it's fine for my 9-year-old daughter to have a pen pal with a 28-year-old man and email him every day. Or like,
yeah,
oh yeah, it's completely fine that my child go over to this grown-ass dude's house and they can go in the bedroom together. And I'm just like, what the fuck are you guys smoking? Like, I can't understand it at all. Like, I've worked on a couple of different shows now with minors involved, and just here in Newfoundland, at least, when production's involved, it's like literally like they need to have a chaperone with them at all times. So it's either their parent or there's like someone who's the minors coordinator, and it's literally their only job to like watch the minors to make sure nothing happens. And it's just like they're constantly hovering around. There's all these safeguards in place for like if like a minor has to get changed on set, like all these different precautions you have to take in order for them to even be allowed, that multiple people have to sign off on. So when I was watching it, I know some of this stuff is like from like the early 2000s, but it was just like shocking how, I don't know, like how these people just kept getting away with it. Like, it was kind of like driving me crazy as I was watching it, and it was basically making me angry at like everybody. So I think it's a good documentary. It's just really troubling subject matter, and I think people are delusional if they think that this sort of shit isn't happening still. So it's kind of sad that it takes like a documentary of like this caliber to kind of have the conversation. I know it's not a very comfortable conversation to have, but it's like, man, if you have kids on set and like you're not watching them, like you're just completely failing them. And also, more background checks, please. I was shocked that like how some of these people were literally like convicted sex offenders, and they were working on a Disney show after like being in jail for, I don't know, almost 2 years. Just like, I don't know, I was disgusted. It was like, kind of like turned my stomach watching it yesterday afternoon, but it was a worthwhile watch. I mean, I'd recommend it. It was a good documentary, just very troubling subject matter. That's all.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, watching Priscilla and the same thing kind of happening there with the parents, like there's a little bit of resistance and then they just like let their children like totally go away. And if you remember like the documentaries that came out in like 2018, 2019, the Michael Jackson interviews, same thing there, like parents just, you know, totally give up their kids when, you know, fame comes around or money comes around. And I just read the Jeanette McCurdy memoir not too long ago, and you know, same thing there. She talked about how her mom, like, they didn't have a good relationship, but you know, her mom was making her into a cash cow, basically. So same thing happens there. I know it happened to Amanda Bynes. I love Amanda Bynes, and
she's
really
such a queen.
I know. I really wish she was like involved in this, but I don't know if she had to take like hush money, or she's scared to speak up, or whatever is going on.
I wish
there.
She was involved as well. I would have liked to hear it from her point of view, but it's also like, I'm sure she'll eventually tell her side of everything at some point. She might just not be ready to do that right now, right? So
I would love that. But yeah, it's been a very topical subject lately, especially on like TikTok. So after, you know, Jeanette McCurdy's book and all that, you know, the rumblings came out even more with other child stars like going on podcasts and being on TikTok videos talking about the, you know, mistreatment or neglect or like abuse they faced. So, you know, I'm glad that it's being brought up, and, you know, maybe people will finally be held accountable and they'll start changing things in the industry. And I really like Drake Bell's story. It was really sad, and to see the relationship he had with his dad, who really had the best interest for his son, but, you know, you can tell how hurt he is over everything that's happened to his son. He probably, you know, feels guilty for it and shit. They have like a really touching conversation at the end, and Drake's talking about like, you know, how hard it is and stuff. I forget the quote, you know, and then his dad like reassures him. He's like, you just got to do this every day. And it seemed like Drake wanted to, you know, make parameters in the child industry tighter so that like no other child would have to go through the same abuse that he faced. But yeah, I thought it was really good. But
I will
really
say
dark.
with the Drake Bell stuff in particular, though, I wish the documentarian pressed him a little bit harder in terms of, I think he's
what
been
he
convicted of yeah. some, you mm-hmm. know, I don't know how to, I don't want to speak out of turn, but essentially inappropriate relations with children as
yeah.
well. And I don't think they pressed him at all on it. And even just to give him a chance of like, listen, basically being like, I had inappropriate relations when
yeah.
I was a kid, so my like expectations of relationships are all warped or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like
to
have him discuss it, it felt very much to me like they lightly say like, oh yeah, I had some stuff happen, but I never touched anyone physically, and you know, I've paid for it now, type of thing. It was very much like one or two lines, and to me it's just like having this in depth of a documentary and not kind of addressing it felt a little bit yucky.
They
to
just
me.
Like glazed
yeah.
over it
yeah,
really
yeah.
quickly.
Where it's like you should have
it
pressed it a little bit. I'm fine with hearing his whole side of the story and how terrible that was. I mean, it's fucking awful. But I would have liked to hear them press him on, you know, what he was charged with a couple years ago. Yeah.
What else have you been consuming?
Nothing. Everything else we've discussed. Love Lies Bleeding, Quiet on Set, all these movies for now slaying. I finished Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Took me 108 hours. I will say that the game kind of overstays its welcome a little bit. It implements all these weird little things in the last couple of acts that very much just feel like they're just dragging it on. And it's like, okay, guys, I'm 90 hours in. We could wrap this up now. You know, like
yeah.
we don't need to be, you know, introducing a new mechanic that for some reason is going to take me two hours to get through this, right? Like, it's just...
Don't tell me that. I already feel like I'm only like 10 hours in, and I already feel like they've stuffed way too much extra shit in it.
I'm not joking around. The last boss fight... you will get like character tutorials on how to do things. Like, it's literally like
cool.
insane, like what they're doing in that game. For me, I think the whole ending falls flat. I can't get into it without spoiling it for people playing through it.
Yeah.
I very much think it's still a great game. It's just like it overstayed its welcome, and for me, the ending makes me angry, so we can't talk about it. But that's it. Let's get into Ginger Snaps, I think.
Fair. Yeah, so let's get into our film. Let's you know, it's time to unknot Ginger Snaps to unleash. Jill, why don't we start off with you letting people know why you chose this?
Yeah, of course. So this is a film that really resonated with me in the most formative years of my adolescence. You know, it was a time... Here we go. It was a time when I really developed my taste in horror. And to this day, I would define my taste in horror as like feminine or girly. And I tend to lean towards movies with strong female leads and themes and, of course, body horror. Additionally, this was also a time in my life when I was struggling with mental illness for the first time, and it was really new to me. So I found that consuming media that was relative to that experience to be extremely helpful. For example, Girl Interrupted was in heavy rotation at the time.
Yep,
it's a banger. And I would say that Ginger Snaps 2 is the horror version of Girl Interrupted. Not to mention, the setting of a Canadian winter just felt like really familiar and even comforting to me. And apart from all of that, it's the natural progression after doing our first Ginger Snaps episode about a year ago, I believe. So it's been an ongoing joke here on the podcast that our next pick is perpetually Ginger Snaps 2, just to fuck with and torture
yeah.
Colton. But it's time. Welcome to rehab, baby.
Well, let's get into the trailer, then we'll be back with the synopsis and first experiences.
Worst was over. You thought the beast was dead. But the nightmare.
What was that? Oh my god.
Has just begun. From the creators of Ginger Snaps.
What are you doing here?
I'm on to you.
Comes the next chapter. As one of the most terrifying werewolf tales continues.
Do you feel it? You're not alone.
In a world of eternal darkness.
If you keep me here, people are gonna die.
It waits.
What the hell is out there?
The monster. It wants to mate with me.
How can you escape?
How do we get out of here? It found me.
With the evil.
This is not good. This is so not supposed to be happening.
He knows you're changing.
Lives in your veins.
Go back to the darkness!
What's happening?
What the hell?
Can
wouldn't go out there if I were you.
Ginger Snaps 2 Unleashed.
I just saw the freakiest thing.
Ginger Snaps 2 Unleashed was directed by Brett Sullivan and written by Megan Merton, and the story is as follows. Following the events of the first film, Bridget relies on a steady dose of monkshood to keep her impending lycanthropy at bay. But after a presumed overdose, she soon finds herself in a rehab clinic for teenage girls. There she meets an eccentric cast of new characters and must go to extreme lengths in order to secure her next fix. Soon she enlists the help of Ghost, a capable young girl who vows to help her escape and put an end to the werewolf that has been stalking Bridget all this way.
So we'll go to our first experience. Is this our first time seeing this, or are we seasoned Ginger Snap watchers? We've watched, what is there, like three of these at least, I think? Yeah, I think there's three. You know, are we just all about that feminist werewolf vibe? Did you want to say anything else about your first experiences with this, Jill? Or did you say your piece? Or
I did not say my piece.
Oh, okay.
Because I know that you told us to keep this two separate segments and not say
Perfect.
Yeah, I remember things. Okay. First time watching this was like, I think grade 9, maybe. So after watching the first movie and becoming totally obsessed, I got my friend into it. And I think I talked about this in the Ginger Snaps episode, the first one. My friend asked his sister, who lived in Ontario, to get him 1 and 2 for Christmas on DVD. Because I'm from the middle of nowhere. There isn't like a place to buy DVDs, or like there's no theater, nothing like that. We have to go to the gas station or like whatever. So we got the DVD basically imported to Newfoundland. We watched it, became obsessed with it, and obviously I burnt it off on to a DVD and continued to watch it a million times over the years. Colton, have you ever seen it before?
No, I haven't seen it before. Obviously, we've been over this. Ginger Snaps, I didn't watch as a teenager at all. It wasn't a formative movie for me. For some reason, I even had like an emo girlfriend and stuff around this time, and I don't remember her talking about it either. She would have loved it. But
that's a shame.
You know, Ginger Snaps 2, the first time I watched it was yesterday. As a, I don't know, I was trying to do the math. Am I 31 or 32? Whatever I am, I'm old for watching this movie for the first time. And yeah, I mean, I think I've only seen the original Ginger Snaps twice, maybe. So yeah, this was the first time I saw this one. What about you, Rowan?
I might have lied on Letterboxd, because on my Letterboxd, it says that I said I saw this, but I, watching this, I do not remember any of it. So this is kind of like my first time seeing it, if I did see it. The only thing I can think of, it keeps coming up, is the Space Channel, because that's where I saw the first Ginger Snaps. Mm-hmm. So
this would be on Space Channel for sure.
Oh yeah.
Hell yeah.
Late Night Space Channel. So maybe, yeah. Like maybe they played 1 and 2 and 3, and I did see it, but yeah, I'm gonna say this is my first time, because I remember nothing of this was familiar, so this was definitely yeah, we'll say this is my first time. What about you, Mike?
Okay, so speaking of old, I saw this in theaters.
Nice.
Because I fucking loved Ginger Snaps 1. Obviously, we already got into that on the last episode of Ginger Snaps. So, but yeah, I was also very ride or die with the two of them. And I, it's just so funny because you brought up Girl Interrupted. That was another one of my favorites. Like, I just love, like, all female movies. Like,
yes.
Just get rid of all the men. I do not care. Like, wash my hands of them. Like, it reminds me of when we were, a bunch of us were listing our favorite genres of, like what genres we find ourselves, like, really interested in and, like, experts in. And my dear friend Emily wrote down gay and sad. And I was like, that is such a fucking mood, and that is definitely one of the best genres. So yeah, so I obviously thoroughly enjoyed this one in theaters, and I'm very glad I got to see it in theaters, because I mean, it was a million years ago, but I feel like that was one of those times where we, like, went out in the parking lot, and it was playing at, like, the little small cinema back when we had more than one, and we'd go out in the parking lot behind the mall and smoke up and then go in reeking of weed, I'm sure, and this was years before it was legal. You know, just stinking to high heaven that we going up and buying our popcorn and our fucking massive sodas. And there was like maybe two other people in the whole theater. So it was like a very magical experience.
That's bomb, dude. That's like the best way you could do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a good experience. So I always look back very fondly on this movie because I liked the movie, but I also, you know, the circumstances were like just kind of magical. And I've seen it a couple times since, but I haven't actually watched it in quite a while. So
let's get into the comic books and intravenous drugs, I guess, of it all. I don't really have a witty one for this. The floor is open. Let's discuss Ginger Snaps too.
I like that you think that you usually have a witty one.
Yeah, I never do.
Never, dude. I do better on Stream Screams. Like, I
absolutely
do.
I'll give you that.
Thank
yeah,
you.
I'll give you that.
I hate you all. I mean, my first note on this is obviously the intro to it. It seems to be a common theme, at least this last year, of these, you know, early 2000s, like...
Mm-hmm. Stuttery, cheap MTV knockoff.
Yeah, like, I don't... What would you call it? Like, prog metal? Or I don't even know what it is.
Industrial.
Yeah, industrial.
Queen of the Damned adjacent.
Amazing. And that's what was great about the first Ginger Snaps movie is that the soundtrack was killer. It had like Cradle of Filth and like just all the bangers. And this one didn't really have like a soundtrack with tracks from other like bands or artists. It was just like, you know, the score was done by the same guy. Still a banger, but not as iconic as the first one.
But yeah, no, like overall with this, I did really like the tone. I thought it was kind of odd. It was kind of weird. I don't know about anyone else. It kind of really gave me like 3-4 Nightmare on Elm Street vibes. Like not just, you know, because it's in like a facility, but just like, it's just like kind of off. Like, you know, the vibe is like a little off.
Like psychologically.
Yeah, like it's just like, you know, like something's kind of up in this facility. Like, you know, not everything is what it seems. And it just like, I like the tone of it. I don't know. Maybe I just like tones in this setting. Maybe it's just my personal thing, because this is, I, you know, nowhere as nuts as what I'm used to, but like this is, you know, this is kind of the setting of what I work in. So I, you know, that I can like kind of relate to the actual physical setting of it and how even, you know, even when I'm working, I'm like, you know, there's always something kind of off and weird about being there. And just facilities like that are always just great settings for horror movies.
Mm-hmm. It is, because it is an off. There's no way for it to be on. You know what I mean? I don't think. It's like a prison that isn't a prison.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? In a way.
I agree with that.
Like a prison without bars, except that they do also have bars. It's like, you know what I mean? And locks and supervised showers.
Yeah, for me, it just feels like a prison, but it's for like the teenage characters. You can have like, okay, this is their version of the prison, I guess, without
they can't actually put them in prison, so they're like,
this is the closest thing. Yeah,
here you go, here's this home for
a
you
psychiatric hospital.
Yeah
And this one, fun little piece of trivia, the hospital is actually a real life abandoned mental hospital in Edmonton, and so the state of it, so like the paint peeling off the walls and everything falling to pieces, was exactly as filmmakers had used in the film. So I think especially like the abandoned section.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think most of the times with this sort of thing, you'd have to find an abandoned spot. Like imagine actually filming in a, you know, a functioning, you know, rehab facility or something like that, right? You would just be putting so many people in like shitty situations that it's like you have to find an abandoned building for this sort of movie.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I feel like the tradition in the narrative is always that it is a repurposed space, and I feel like that happens a lot in real life too, because I mean, anybody who pays attention to like the news or something, when someone's trying to open up like a rehab facility or like a hospital or a home or anything like that, like everybody loses their minds. They're like, I don't want that in my neighborhood. You know what I mean? So I feel like that is part of it. It's like a prison made out of some repurposed old place that nobody could find something to be a home for.
Mm-hmm. I will say that, you know, I'm sure at least probably 2 to 3 you are going to disagree with me. But kind of my first major issue with this one is I just don't think Bridget is as charismatic as Ginger. I needed more Ginger in this.
Absolutely not. But I think she does a good job, Bridget and Emily Perkins. I think she really like comes into her own. Like, she's not as meek anymore as she used to be in the first one. And, you know, when she's transforming, you really see that when she becomes, like, edgier and angrier. So I think she did a really awesome job at becoming a different person and it being believable. But I agree. Catherine Isabel Ginger only had three minutes of screen time on here. And, you know, you want her to come back, but she's dead. So you got to watch the third one, which is like a prequel.
Unless you're me, then you're like, 3 minutes is too much. You could have done with 0 minutes, and it would have been a better movie.
No, we gotta have her.
How?
Listen. I actually like Bridget in this movie. I had issues with her in the first one, where I thought, like, in comparison to Ginger, she was just very like stone faced, very just I found kind of dull. And to me, Ginger was like over the top, kind of like edgelordy, which kind of annoyed me the entire movie. When I was watching this one, I was like, oh, they had to actually like amp up Bridget's writing to make her like a protagonist of the movie. So she's just, in my opinion, like a more fleshed out character in this movie. Like, I have multiple notes where I'm like, oh, I actually like this character in it. She has a little bit more range now. You know, she has more to work with because once again, she's obviously she's a co-lead in the first one. It's just very much she's playing like the opposite of Ginger and Ginger's. In my opinion, in the first one, more of like the star of the movie. She's the one that most people will probably leave talking about. Where in this one, it's kind of like, it's more of like Bridget and Ghost's movie, where Ghost is like a completely new character that they got to spend time developing. So I actually liked her in this. I didn't miss Ginger at all, but I would assume if you're a big fan of Ginger Snaps 1, you probably would be missing Ginger quite a bit. Because like you said, she's basically not in the movie.
They keep like teasing.
I'm trying to remember the specific beats, but I think it's maybe shortly after Ghost notices that, like, her, you know, her ear is changing. She kind of cuts off her ear, but there's also a beat, and I can't remember the exact reasoning anymore, but, like, she, you know, considers committing suicide at a moment, right? Like, where she takes the glass and kind of holds it up to her throat and stuff, where it's like, once again, I got notes of that where I'm like, oh, okay, like, obviously suicide was a big part of the first one as well, like, the whole saying, right? But it was kind of like, oh, this doesn't seem like she was considering it because she made a pact with Ginger. It was just literally like the character had a low point where she was like thinking about that. Where like, once again, it was just, it felt a little bit more motivated and a little bit more deep to me where like, you know, I was appreciating her performance a lot more in this one. It's just like, once again, she very much just pales in comparison to her sister in that one where she feels very much like the quiet kind of like morose goth that basically doesn't speak very much, and then obviously by the end of the movie she has to be like the hero for the movie, where it's just like, for me, it was just, she's just so clearly overshadowed by Catherine Isabel, where in this one I think she very much has to take the role. And then you got, you know, Tatiana Maslany, who I think she's great in this too. I very much enjoyed her performance. I didn't know that she was in this movie. I know her from Orphan Black, and I remember,
I was gonna say, she carries everything she's in.
Yeah, I remember watching Orphan Black, and that was the first thing I saw her, and I was just like, I don't know who this actress is, but she's friggin' amazing. So when I was watching
just
this,
eight characters in one episode.
Yeah, exactly, right? So when I was watching this, I was like, oh, that's the, you know, the girl from Orphan Black. I haven't seen her in much. I think she's in She-Hulk or whatever, right?
I was going to say, she's also in She-Hulk, Rowan.
Yeah. Yeah, I love She-Hulk.
Okay, you're the one person, I think, in the world that loves She-Hulk. But I haven't seen it, to be fair, though. So maybe she's really good. Can we go back one second?
Yeah. Sorry. Can we go back and talk about Emily Perkins again and the character of Bridget? I think it's part of her character. Yeah, sorry. In the first one, it's part of her character. It's written in there for her to be her sister's shadow. Like, her mom brings it up. You guys aren't tied together. You don't have to follow her everywhere. And then this is like really where she gets to like break free from that. And I think she does really awesome job doing that. And also she shows like through her acting how she can, you know, become a ferocious werewolf by simultaneously. Like, she still keeps her her humanity at the end. Like, she tries to get Ghost to kill her. And then even when Ghost is like a villain, you know, she just like goes back into the cellar or whatever instead of killing her, you know. So I think she does a good job of, you know, still being Bridget, but being assertive Bridget, but still keeping her human heart. And I think Emily Perkins did awesome. But I want to go back to Tatiana Maslany. I am obsessed with her. Like, she definitely makes this movie.
Oh, she's so good. Yeah.
Yeah.
The character of Ghost, I know they had a different name for her in production, and then they changed it to Ghost. And I think that's a really smart decision, because that makes her character, like, you know, she's always sneaking around.
She's stealthy, and, yeah.
Yeah, like a little poltergeist. I love her. She was like 18 or 19 when this was shot.
Was she?
That's amazing, because she acts like so youthful. Like, you totally believe that's a young child.
Well, yeah, I think in the synopsis I say young girl or something, because I didn't know like exactly what age she was supposed to be playing, because she's very capable, right? Like, she's driving the car without anyone questioning it. Like, you know, there's a line where I think she lived for like 40 odd days after like, you know, burning her grandmother, whoever it was. Yeah, it was just like, okay, she's a very capable character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She has a lot of duality, just like Bridget. You know, Bridget is assertive, but she's still kind of like shy and meek, or can be perceived that way. I think with Ghost, her look and mannerisms are like really playful. She just appears to be this unusual, curious girl, but in reality, she's a villain, and she's like setting everything up. And she's like so calculated, so crafty, like with the gas with the generator. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, where she's siphoning
Polly.
Yeah.
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 I think
she's Polly, the polyester. Yeah, yeah, I love that.
Crap.
Mm-hmm. Her driving is hilarious. I love it when she gets chips and she's just having like a girl sleepover, and it's the same time when Bridget is like doing something gross with her eye with like the monk's hood, and you hear the crunch of the chip while she's just like swinging her legs,
so
having her little
sleepover.
I love that. And I love that she's super smart, turning her grandmother into a fucking living candle because she was mistreated. Crazy. She's such a good character. I love her weird dialogue and narrative when she's like talking in the third person. And, like, it's kind of like she's narrating a story that she's making in her head. Mm-hmm. She's a crazy pathological
liar. Like, writing little, like, nursery rhymes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so
was
good.
Was she mistreated, though? Like, that's what I...
Well, that's
no,
what
she makes
spinning.
A comment. She says that you kind of get your first hint of it when she says, like, what was it? You, like, Barbara flew off the handle, like, if you even walked or something.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like, it's just a throwaway line, but, like, if you know the twist... And you know what's happening, like, you, it's a bit easier to pick up on that, like,
yeah.
To be fair,
she probably
she
did have
about,
a reason.
To be fair, she lies about multiple other things, though, right? So, it, I mean, I would assume that she was probably mistreated as well, obviously, to burn her grandmother.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say that she needs a motivation, so
yeah, it's either
go.
That or she's a, like a sociopath.
Yeah, I thought she was just, right? Like, a psychopath, just because I was like, well, she lied about the Tyler thing. I was like, so she's probably making this up about her grandmother, especially because they have. Like the scenes of her grandmother like hitting the help button every time you see her.
I don't know. I feel like it's revenge. You know, she uses Bridget like from the very beginning to protect her from her bad guys or her enemies, which there are a lot of them, she says. Yeah. So I feel like, you know, she's getting her control back by lighting her grandmother on fire, keeping her alive, but being able to control her, getting control of Bridget and using her to like, you know, keep people from taking her away again or whatever it is. So, you know, she's really childlike, but also she's fucking crazy. And I don't know, her character is just so good.
But there's something about that that seems like trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even her, like, physical appearance, because she's very pale and, like, her hair is dyed that, like, you know, white blonde. Yeah, yeah. It's like, literally, it's like a little clean spot on a, you know, dirty chalkboard or something. Like,
she's so cute. I love it when she's shooting Alice at the end and she goes, go back to the darkness. And then Alice comes in after she like shot the gun at her and she's like, what the fuck are you doing? That's so funny.
I was trying to figure out for the longest time, I'm like, what do I know Alice from? And I literally looked at her IMDb and was like, I've seen her in 500 TV shows.
Oh my god, let's go. Rapid
including
fire.
ones that were shot here. Funny enough, so
oh,
I was
really?
Like, I might have, God knows, I might have even seen her around at some point. Like, yeah,
probably with that sweet.
I was like,
I'll have to creep and see if I work with her.
You should, yeah. I don't know if it's been recently, but like, okay. Yeah, I was just like, oh, look at this. Yeah, she's got quite the filmography.
I was just kind of curious, you know, obviously Ginger Snaps being a werewolf trilogy. I'm kind of curious just your thoughts on the werewolfness of this film, because I really thought that it was kind of a step down from the first one.
Wait, the practical effects of the werewolf or
all of it together? To me, like,
I think it's better. I think practical effects are better for sure.
I like the original Ginger Snaps werewolf better because it was so weird looking. It was like slimy.
It was giving Buffy does werewolves.
I just thought the first one, it was so like, it didn't look like anything I had ever seen. Where this one, I was just like, oh yeah, like this is.
Yeah, but I don't think they were trying to make something you've never seen with the first one. Yeah. I think it was just, it didn't work out.
Rowan, guess who worked on this?
Who?
Mr. Greg Nicotero.
Greg Nicotero.
Oh, there you go.
Legend.
And you're
going to
say it's worse?
I mean.
How dare you?
I know. I was like, Rowan does not even know what he's saying right now.
I didn't know that he worked on it, but I do think I have a note that the practical effects overall in this are like way better. Specifically, Beth Ann's like facial prosthetic.
Yeah, I do like
the
transformation
really impressive
stuff better.
Bridget's stuff, obviously, like her one eye and then, you know, the ears and all that stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff here that I thought was just a step up from the first one in terms of the practical effects. I will say with the werewolf, did I miss something or is this just a random werewolf?
It's just like, a random werewolf that's trying to mate with her.
Do we like that? That it's just a random werewolf?
I mean, that's what they do. They do that and they not.
It's like a dog following you home, right?
I kind of assumed that maybe it was like the werewolf. I don't know. Is it the werewolf that bit Ginger? I don't know.
No, because that got hit by a car. Remember?
Yeah,
or a van.
Killed.
Yeah. Remember What's-His-Face hits it with his van and he goes, what the fuck was that?
Mm-hmm. For me, it was a weird little thing. I thought it was going to be a reveal at some point in the movie. Honestly, what I thought they were doing was the werewolf was actually Bridget and she was just an unreliable narrator for a lot of the movie.
Shit.
I thought what they were doing and I was like, okay, when's this gonna be revealed? And it's just not. And I was like, oh, okay, literally it's just a random werewolf that wants to mate. And there was also a part of me that I was like, okay, Ginger, I'm like 90% sure was dead at the end of the last one. But you know, she is like appearing every now and then throughout this movie as like the specter, obviously. I was like, is it just gonna be like Ginger again?
I could see how you might say like maybe they're trying to make it look like she's in her head and she's actually there.
Yeah, I was just wondering like the explanation to me, I guess, where it was just like, oh, it was just another werewolf. I was like, okay, but like that's kind of what made the first one special, I guess, in a way. Like we were following these girls that were turning into a werewolf. So when you keep adding more werewolves, it's just like, okay, there's loads of werewolves in this town. Whatever, you know, they're running around all the time. It was just I just thought there was going to be an explanation or
that's because you're, you know, an A24 boy, and if A24 made this movie, that would have happened.
If A24 Still. Made this movie, it would have been incredibly boring and it would have been 100 minutes of one dude slowly turning into a werewolf, and it just would have been very metaphorical, and that's about it. But, you know, it's very different movie.
I mean, am I the only one? Like, I barely even anything about the werewolf didn't bother me because, especially this time around, so I know all of us at different points have talked about this, but it made me think a lot of, like, of course I thought, like, oh, you know, this has parallels with, you know, A Girl Interrupted or something like that. But also I saw a lot of Lords of Salem in it. Because I was thinking about, like, obviously her lycanthropy is consuming her life, but, like, they're not wrong to say that she's addicted, because even though she has to use the monkshood to keep from transforming, like, it's still a tale of addiction. Is that
like,
just me?
Because
I found it more compelling almost as I almost find it more compelling as that type of film than as, you know, like just purely as like a werewolf sequel, you know what I mean?
Well, it's just similar to the first one where once again they're using kind of the werewolf or the transformation as like a metaphor for something else. Like obviously there is still like the puberty stuff in here as well, like obviously where Bridget's struggling like if she actually likes this guy who's really toxic, and you know, she still has like her feelings of like wanting to mate or whatnot. There's obviously the masturbation scene where it's like the group masturbation scene where she winds up with hairy palms afterwards, which is just, you know, everyone's
that's
been told
brilliant.
That
yeah.
probably as a kid, right? Like, oh, if you masturbate, you got hairy palms, and then, you know, they instantly check their hands, right? Like, you know, like there is still that sort of stuff in the movie. But yeah, it's probably not just based around like puberty or like getting your period like 100%.
Colin's trying to breeze through that mutual masturbation scene just
we don't have to breeze through it. I got notes on it. I got a note that I was like, this is a wild scene. You know, just like for me, it's like, as like a male director to make that scene is quite wild. I understand it's female writer, but it was just I don't know, it was gazy is what I'll say.
It made me so uncomfortable, like growing up watching it.
Yeah, if you're watching that with your parents, it'd probably be a bit awkward, I would say.
Not even with my parents, but, you know, just like the shame of being a female. Masturbation is already, there's enough shame and humiliation around it, but especially as a female to have, you know, so many in a room doing that and being so young and thinking it was something to be ashamed of. Yeah, it just made me super uncomfortable growing up. But now I'm like, oh, okay, it's not that bad.
It was good because, you know, exactly how I'm sure they intended it. Like, it was going on and I hadn't really clued in that it was like, you know, this like nightmare daydream
in her head. Yeah.
And I'm just like, what the fuck is going on right now? Like, how did we get here? What, like, what?
Well, that's why like certain scenes like that in the movie were making me read it like, oh, I wonder when is the werewolf gonna be revealed as Bridget, and she's not a reliable narrator, because there is a lot of like fantasy and whatnot in this movie. Obviously, we've already talked about how the rehab treatment center is like very fantastical in some regards, or like ghost in her comic books and kind of like this fairy tale narration, right? So I was just you know, I was expecting there to be some revelation there at some point. There's a couple of like notes I got on like some wild pieces of dialogue in the movie. The one where I forget what Bridget specifically says, but it's the first therapy session where the person like gets her to divulge, like, what is it, her worst day or best day? Best
My
day, right?
Worst scenario.
Worst scenario. Okay. And then she goes on and like, you know, the therapist writes lesbian.
Or best case scenario.
Lesbian. Oh,
lesbian question
that,
mark, question mark, like double underlines it. That was a wild little monologue that Bridget goes on that it's like pretty intense. I don't have it written down explicitly what it was, but I was like, man, this is a crazy intense monologue. And then they're just like, lesbian question mark. I got
a
good
chuckle.
Yeah,
she's talking about like the appreciation, even being attracted to the smell of feces or something.
Yeah.
And it's so good. It's so campy because she's wearing like this really cheesy shirt.
Get happy or whatever it's called.
Yeah,
happy times,
like,
or
And she's wearing like her little Velcro sneakers and she's tapping them, and then the therapist is just like, lesbian, and the double underline is like so loud. It's
that's
so
how I wrote it in my notes too. I was like, this is everything to me. I was like, I mean, at least they're tapping into the, like, you know, the subtext.
And Mimi Rogers, who played their mom in the first movie.
Mother!
Dude, she made
mother.
It so good. And that was one thing that made me sad in this movie, is like, we don't really know what happens to the mom.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of invested in that, and I want to know what happens to her. And we never get an answer. So like, I need Ginger Snaps 4 to come out.
Yeah, because she
and
was like
Mimi
there.
Rogers.
She was like on it. She's like, I will do whatever I have to. Like, let's bury the body. I'll move.
Yes.
Like, we'll buy wigs, you know? And, you know, she's got the, like, gardening attire on all the time and, you know, her little shovels. And yeah, it's very, like, plastic housewife. But then it's like, I will make a beautiful garden on top of the grave that I have to dig, you know?
Yeah, anything for her kids.
Love her.
I have a weird technical question to see if anyone else was bothered by something in the movie. I thought the use of stock sound effects in this movie was incredibly annoying. I think I'd say like probably about 80% of the Foley is like stock sound effects I've heard reused and repurposed throughout numerous like video games and stuff, especially. But I was just like, how Jill just mentioned, like, essentially the double underline was really loud. I found all the sound effects in the movie were mixed a little bit too high, and then they were all like stock sound effects as well.
It was the door hinges.
The door hinges.
Warcraft.
All the time.
The only thing I noticed that with was the two times, and I counted two times, that the ladder came down and smacked into the floor from the attic.
Yeah, there was that. There's the door hinges. There's, I think, maybe it's like when they're lowering, maybe like a vertical. It was like this chain sort of noise. But I had multiple notes of like the stock sound effects in this movie are insane. And there's like a vase or like something gets knocked off screen and breaks. And it's like the stock vase breaking sound effect that plays. And when I was just watching it, I was just kind of, you know, drove crazy is a little bit too hard of a word for, like, but I was just like, I had to note it. I was like, this is insane.
I wonder if it wasn't in the budget, even though they had the highest budget of all the Ginger Snaps films at $4.8 million.
Foley isn't, I don't know if that breaks the budget, but I mean, it probably is easier to use just like a stock asset library, obviously. But it was just, for me, they were just like pitch perfect, like replicas of things I've heard before. That was just like, I don't know, if I was making a short film and I didn't have time to like pitch modulate it or anything, just to throw it in there. It was just wild to me that I was like, I've heard some of these sound effects, like, it's guarantee like playing some video games probably hundreds of times, right? Like, it's just like insane.
It really takes you out of it because you're like, shit, I know that from somewhere else.
Yes, 100%.
I'm not going to lie. I literally did not notice it at all.
So I'm glad that the Foley worked for you, because most people, if you watch a movie, like, you're not going to point out that it had good Foley, because you just don't pay. You don't notice it if it's good. You only notice it if it's bad, right? It's like a thankless job, essentially. So in this, I just thought a lot of it was pretty poor, I guess, or maybe they just didn't have the budget to do it, or the time, who knows, but something I noticed.
What did you guys think of, like, some of the kills in this? The I'm trying to think. I guess, you know, Tyler was killed kind of off screen in the woods, but
I got one. Beth Ann, I thought her murder was brutal, because it's against like the plastic wrap, whatever, and you see like the blood on her face that's pressed against the plastic, and it like smudges down right before she gets torn away. And I love that they do the dragging in these movies. But yeah, best kill.
I agree. I really liked it as well. And then obviously I already mentioned the facial prosthetic that she has. But I think also, is it Ghost who calls her a cunt in that scene?
Yeah, she's like, when she's laying the coins on
the coins
her
on
eyes.
Her eyes. Yeah.
I'm sorry, you were such a cunt.
Yeah, that was so good. Yeah.
Ghost, just so sassy. So sad.
Oh, her delivery like that. But seriously, though, like, I can't stop thinking about how, like, everything she's in, she carries. But I was like, it's so difficult for, I mean, she wasn't as young as the character, but like, she was still young, and her character was like, you know, however, I mean, we don't know how old she was, but like, I just feel like for her to carry the movie like she does is like, she's so good, you know,
so
like,
much charisma.
And it's her first major role, I'm pretty sure, as well, right? Or at least, you know, when I look at her filmography, she's credited as voice in one previous movie, right? So like, once again, when I saw her instantly in this, I was like, oh, she's got it. Like, she's like great at what she's doing. Like, she understood the assignment. She nailed it. She has some complicated stuff to work with as well. Like, as someone who's not haven't seen the movie before, like, she has to sell that she's been sexually assaulted, like, in the third act as well. And then she has to have the heel turn of like, oh, I was actually faking that, you know, and, you know, I'm crazy. Which, once again, just, I guess she is older than I thought. But when I was watching this movie, I was like, what the hell were you telling this like 15-year-old to get this? Like, you know, where she's like bawling her eyes out and like kind of like,
she's so good,
you know, curled up in the corner. Like, I'm just like, yo, I don't want to be the director that day, like giving the notes on how you get that, right? Like, so yeah, she was excellent. You know, I'm glad that she wasn't actually like 15 or something to portray that. But she has a lot of complicated stuff to work with. And being like a genre movie and sell it. And then also for a lot of fans, obviously stand in as kind of like, you know, she's still supporting in this, but she's basically replacing Ginger for a lot
Ginger,
of the movie,
exactly.
Right? Which is just like, I'm sure there was probably a lot of fans that were just incredibly pissed off without Ginger's inclusion. But then even to kind of like win them over by the end of the movie, be like, okay, she's not Ginger, but I mean, I like her, is like, you know, that's a pretty big win, I would say.
It is. 100%. Yeah.
I mean, slightly spoiled, but I do prefer this one over the first one. So, you know, I won't spoil my rating, but I did enjoy this a little bit more. Because like I said, I already mentioned like that, like, it's a poor term to call it like edgelordiness, but it's just like the sort of, you know, shit that I grew up with. I thought a lot of it felt a little bit off in the first film, where it's basically absent from this one, right? Like, this is, you know, it's this, you already mentioned that like the soundtrack is missing all these needle drops. Like, it's a very different tone, this movie as a whole. So I was just like, oh, a lot of the things that were kind of irritating me about the first one just aren't present in this one. And then also, it's just, I didn't really know the narrative of this one at all. I didn't know where it was going, right? This one felt, I don't necessarily want to call the first one cliched, because at the time I can't really think of anything else that did that, obviously. But it's just like, I knew, obviously, when you're watching Ginger Snaps, that it's like, okay, well, one of them's going to turn into a werewolf and, you know, maybe one of them will have to die at the end or something. I didn't know explicitly they'd have to like kill each other essentially, but I know kind of the beats of where it's going. When I was watching this, I had not really any idea where it was going. Like, once again, I thought it was going to be unreliable narrator all in her head sort of shit, right? So it was just, yeah. I was surprised by this. I was not expecting Ghost to essentially be, I don't know, like doomsday prepper-esque character by the third act, right? Like, very capable, you know, just using, rigging up, like, you know, tripwires and explosives and, you know, using rifles and whatnot. I was surprised with this movie where it went. And I did enjoy, like, a lot of it where it went. I was, you know, I do think it's kind of a little bit slow in the middle or whatever, but, you know, it wasn't bad.
She was giving very, like, Nancy Thompson, too, which I loved, near the end, you know, like, once they essentially go to the house or cabin or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, there's Nightmare on Elm Street vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, also, we briefly mentioned that this one's set in the winter, which I'm just a big winter horror guy anyways. Like, I like... Instantly, if a movie is like a winter horror, I just know it's usually a lot more complicated and I just haven't seen them as much. Where the first one, if like that's not set in the winter, right? Like that's like a summer movie, fall. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I was watching this one, instantly I was like, oh, it's winter horror. That's slightly more interesting to me to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I just like the vibe of like essentially the you know, the log cabin in the woods, kind of isolated, the forest around, you know, the deer outside, you know, having the... getting blown up and have to get put out of its misery. Like there was just a lot of little beats that I was like, okay, this is closer to like what I grew up with anyway. So like the hunting cabin, all the winter,
yeah,
you know,
it feels
I like
familiar.
The Canadian-ness of it. It was a little bit familiar that I enjoyed.
The most Canadian thing though.
Yes.
You know where I'm going with this.
Well, exactly. I was trying to pivot to it multiple times, but yes, go
Sorry.
For it.
Jesus
yeah.
Christ. Well, the most Canadian thing in this movie, besides the Canadian flag sticker on the back of that car when the guy's getting like mauled,
that's like a blink in you'll miss it though, but yes, absolutely.
Yeah, is beating a werewolf over the head with a curling stone, and your grandma was like the provincial curling champion. Love it.
I had that spoiled for me by someone's Letterboxd review that I chose to read myself.
Oh my god, well you should have watched it before.
I know right, Jill?
I was just going to say, I'm surprised we've gone this far and not have had a big conversation about Tyler.
You're pivoting again. We haven't even discussed the curling kill. That was a great kill. I mean, with like the punji pit or whatever it's called it underneath, like the makeshift one, falling the multiple floors, the impaling.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that was a lot of fun. I like that as well. But yes, we can get to Tyler and how terrible he is, if you'd like. It's just not a fun conversation, you know?
Rowan is personally offended by this character is the issue.
Well, that's why I kind of felt weird that, like, you know, Bridget was kind of angry about it. That, like, wait, he didn't do that to you? Like, so.
I mean, that's a shitty thing to do, though. To frame someone for
100%,
like,
but still,
yeah. So
Bridget knows, he's
but
just
he only did it to
scumbag.
Everybody else.
Well, yeah. That's kind of my point too, Mike. It's like, yes, he didn't explicitly do it to Ghost that we know of, but I think it's probably safe to say he has done that with
yes,
the other
exactly.
people in the rehab facility. You know,
I don't know if he does
I mean,
that, but
she
he does manipulate
in
them.
On him getting a blowjob. So you know.
That's why I was like, Bridget, why are you so angry about this? Just be like, cool, all right, it's done.
Because she still has humanity in the end. That's why she doesn't kill Ghost.
Rowan wants her to be completely feral by the end. Just, you know, rip her apart, limb
her. But she's not
limb
her
ghost.
Sister. And I love that for her. I love that she's not like Ginger. And I love that really powerful line where it's the very last time we see Ginger.
Yes.
And she's like, what was it? I don't want to be
I'm
known.
Stronger. Oh, really? That line you're talking about? That's not how I remember the first 15 years of your life. Yeah, well, that's how I remember the last 15 minutes of yours. That's the
so
line
good.
Of the movie.
Yeah, that was
that's
great.
Like,
yeah.
That I was like, I'm not a Ginger Snaps fan, but I was like, yeah,
get
it. Get
it, girl.
Was, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to say shout out to, you said that was the most Canadian thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't.
Oh.
The fucking bowl of Sun Chips was. when they were having their sleepover.
Sun chips in America.
I know, but it's just so Canadian to have like a bowl
potato
of sun chips.
Potato chips are like a really Canadian snack, I feel. Like, I feel like we eat a lot of
more
chips.
Well, they had three different kinds. They had three bowls of them. Yeah.
I was going to say one of the orderlies, like when he talks, he has like the prototypical, like the American trying to do the Canadian accent where it's almost like Fargo-esque.
Oh, yeah.
He opens his mouth at one point. He's just like unnamed orderly. And I was like, oh, that's like the, I don't know, the Edmonton area, you know, the Albertan accent, essentially. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The ending, I guess that's one thing I'd like to just quickly discuss. Like, I like kind of like Ghost's whole like narration and all that, like being wrapped up with a nice bow, her making this like pretty shitty, I'm going to say, comic book cover, you know, but like I liked it.
What?
Oh, you thought that was a good comic book cover?
You shut the fuck up right now.
I'm not joking. Okay, all right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. But, okay, first of all, the ending shot of her portrait of, like, you know, the comic shmi of herself, the one of Bridget, I thought it was a perfect note to end on. And there's a little Easter egg in there. The necklace that Ghost is wearing is the same one that Ginger wore all throughout the first movie, and maybe even in, like, you know, the when she's, like, a figment of Bridget's imagination or whatever. And I love that whole comic thing that she's always, like, cutting comics and gluing them together. And everything she makes is fucking badass.
She
so
is
you're
a great
wrong.
Artist.
Okay, well, agree to disagree. I thought it was kind of a shitty looking comic book cover. But, like, once again, I like what it's saying. And it feels very much like they were setting up a sequel for this to go off to, or like setting up a world. Like, obviously there wasn't cinematic universes in this shit back then, but it felt like, oh, I can see where this is going, or I could see where a spin-off comic book would go or something like that, right? It was just,
yeah,
I was watching it and I was like, okay, it makes sense. And I like the idea of her grandmother coming home and, you know, her giving her like a nice homecoming, you know, just unleashing Bridget on
it's
her.
Such a good ending with
yeah,
like
it's good.
The banner.
It's great.
You know, you have that foreboding like eeriness. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Ghost saying she's going to prevail to like unleash her reign of moral terror on her many enemies. I mm-hmm. love that. I love
which
how,
was a
like,
nice callback to when she said that earlier.
Yes.
And they corrected her and she's like,
mortal.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. She's like, no, it's moral.
And it is moral.
And we find out, yes, that it actually is. That was that. I like that little bit of writing myself. Uh-huh.
I just like Colton wishing a ginger snap, a GSU into existence.
Honestly, like, I'm not riding for the GSU, but I am kind of surprised that someone hasn't tried to reboot this or make like a sequel or a requel or whatever you want to call it. Maybe there's just not like a Canadian filmmaker that, you know, has the pedigree or the funds available to them to make something like this right now. I mean, Denis mm-hmm. Villeneuve isn't going to make this instead of Dune 3 or something, right?
Yeah.
So it's just,
I mean, he should, but
yeah, it's just I'm surprised where, like, obviously film production is just like so IP crazy nowadays that you have something mm-hmm. like this that, like, you know, is pretty well revered. Obviously it's a cult classic to some degree, but it's still like I'm surprised that it hasn't been tried to make some sort of reboot or something out of it, right?
Yeah, someone needs to do it. What I'm surprised
that is a good point.
About is that we've been going this long and we haven't spoken about Rocky and his demise.
Oh my God, thank you. That was going to be my next note. I'm like, literally, Ro is somewhere right now, just like
standing
in his
ovation.
Glee. Yeah, yeah.
Do you like that head? The dog head?
I mean, listen, dog's gotta eat. Why not Rocky, right? I mean, yeah, we didn't get to see the kill, so I don't know how happy I am about that. But, no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, I mean, the head I thought was pretty funny, just because I didn't think the head looked great.
It seemed way too big, I thought, for Rocky, yeah. But then again, like, I don't know.
Rocky's, like, little doghouse was very small.
Well, that's why I'm saying, and the head was like, yeah, you know, like huge. I was just like, what?
It was,
yeah.
I love that scene because she's like kicking her legs like a kid against like the washer and dryer, and she has this decapitated head right next to her, and you know,
so
she does her little her little poem, Rocky runs, Rocky plays, Rocky misses the good old days. She's so fun. I love her character. I wanted to ask you guys a question. So if you had to wrap up Ginger Snaps in one sentence, how would you?
Like the series?
This or Ginger Snaps 2.
Okay.
Oh, I would say something along the lines of just like it does for substance abuse disorder what it the original did for,
okay,
you know, women's coming of age. I don't know. That's basically, you know, I missed the werewolf aspect, but, you know, I would fine tune it to basically have, you know, lycanthropy being an aspect of like substance abuse, which is what the movie's about, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God, girl.
I just wanted to read this Letterboxd review, which says it is the personification of Girl Interrupted.
Oh, okay.
That's what I was kind of like at. Like, if you could just, you know, make a little one-liner for the movie, what would it be?
I'll reserve my answer for when I rate it.
Okay.
Mike's more like, this is my favorite werewolf movie ever. 2 out of 5.
2 out of 5. I cannot believe that my fucking Predator 2 rating is like gonna live forever to be used against me. Or Predator 1, whatever.
Yeah,
it was.
I can't remember which one it was, but yeah, it was just hilarious.
No, it was Predator 1, because I don't like Predator 2 yet.
Yeah.
Fuck.
We need to talk about Bridget's bubbling arm. It's so gnarly.
To be fair, and I do have that in bold as well. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It looks so good.
Yeah, it was gross. It was cool. To me,
pulsating,
that was like
pus coming out. Yeah.
It was one of my favorite effects of the whole movie. Mm-hmm.
Agreed. It's pretty gnarly. That's what I've written down, like the bad injection site, you know? Yeah.
I want to go back to Alice's character. First of all, I love her. She's so funny because she's like an ex-addict and she tries to act all professional, but then she tries to act like kind of cool around Bridget when she's talking about like, what drug is this? And she has her sleeves rolled up and you see this like really bad Def Leppard tattoo and another bad tattoo and she's like smoking out the window.
Yeah.
I think it's so funny, but also I think she has a really great moment near the end when she's very much giving Ellen Ripley vibes with that gun.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was great. This watch, I was really focusing on the theme wolves in sheep's clothing versus like reality, like what's happening. Like Ghost, she's transfixed on like becoming the character in her comic books, becoming strong, being a leader of a pack of wolves. She's always lurking and listening. And on the surface, it looks like she's trying to help Bridget by escaping, but it's for her own selfish desire to like own Bridget. And she appears so cute and innocent, but despite all of her quirks, like something really sinister lurks beneath, like especially at the end when she kills Alice with the hammer. Fucking brutal, dude. So I think that's really interesting. Also, Barbara, the berm victim. Did I just call Barbara Alice?
No.
In the last
one?
No.
You said the right one.
I said Alice? Yeah. Okay, sorry. Yeah. Anyways, Barbara, the berm victim, she looks truly horrifying. Like, I remember being scared of, like, all of her scenes where it's just, like, her eyes poking out of this full body cast. And you can see, like, the red burnt skin. And there's that scene where Bridget is in the vents and she like locks eye contact with Barbara and she like gasps. And I had the same reaction. It's so scary.
To be fair, I think like everybody spots Bridget in the vents, which was kind of funny as she was crawling by. I was like, I would never spot anybody in the vents. And it's just somehow Bridget locks eyes with everybody as she crawls by.
Yeah.
I mean, Bridget, really in fairness, Bridget was being loud as fuck in those vents.
True.
Yeah.
True.
I was like, how did they not hear it like thump, 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 thump?
That's like any movie with vents. I'm just like, anyone in any room's like, yeah, I can hear you in the vent.
And they use real vents when they shot this, I think. No, they used
the
real
vent
at the
are
end.
That size in real life.
Okay, no, sorry. At the end when she crawls out, that was like the real vent, but they use like mirrors and stuff to like make the tunnels like seem longer and stuff. And I think it was like offset or whatever. But yeah, back to Barbara the burn victim. She looks so scary, but she's also a victim of her granddaughter, even though Ghost is a victim of Barbara, you know, it's comes full circle. Then we have Bridget herself. She appears to be a meek girl and a drug addict, but she's actually a werewolf in transformation. And at the end, you know, she maintains her humanity. She doesn't hurt Ghosts. So I think she has that duality, but also Ghosts being a villain, but also being a victim. And that kind of goes back to like what we said earlier about Drake Bell. You know, he's an abuser, but he's been abused. I don't know why I made that full circle connection.
Why do we need to go back to what we've been consuming to make the full circle? All right.
Because that clicked in my head. But yeah, that's all I got.
I would rather not look for the rationale and why Drake Bell possibly assaulted
victims
children.
Victims hurt other
whatnot.
Victims, so I think
I can agree he's a victim, but I don't know if I want to go that far.
Well, with that, let's land the plane and get into rating this. If you're new to the program, our rating system is nay, okay, yay, or slay.
I'm also giving it a yay. Like, the original is a classic for me. I think no matter what you think of the sequels, the third one, the quality is, you know, whatever. But, like, this is, it's such a, like, solid sequel. And for something that was clearly, like, it was probably made quickly and cheaply. But I love the genre of, like, a Suspiria-esque, like, confined space full of women with problems. You know, and again, I love, like, hospital set movies. I, you know, love the echoes of other things, like Girl Interrupted. You know, the cast is great. Tatiana, like, fucking carries. It still has that Canadian winter vibe. It's such a big yay for me. I love it. The vibe is there. I loved it when I watched it, and I love it now. Bro, what do you think?
Yeah, geez, this is a hard one. I think I'm gonna go with like a strong okay on this one. I liked it. I don't know if this was one I'd necessarily like revisit often. I liked it. I didn't like it that much. I gave the first one a slay. Like, I absolutely loved the first one. And I don't know, like maybe another watch of this, I'd come around more on it. I think it just kind of threw me off a bit, where the first one's so kind of satirical and everything to the genre that the tone of this just was like a total offshift of what I was expecting going into it. And obviously, like I said, when we first started talking about it, like, I love Ginger so much, and I love the character and her traits, and I just like really miss that in this film. And I also like, I kind of wish there was like more werewolf stuff in this. Like, we get quite a bit towards like the end of it, but I thought it could have been sprinkled a little more throughout the film. I think you brought it up, Colton. Like, I did find kind of in the middle part, this kind of seemed a little long and towards the middle. So I'm going to give it an okay, I know. But yeah, how about you, Jill?
Oh, man. I'm doing a shift up here, because in the beginning, I fully was prepared to come in here and give it a strong yay. But I'm going for that slay, because as much as I love Ginger Snaps 2, and it's still not the first one, which is my, like, favorite, I can't, like, really judge them on the same caliber, because they are very different stories and very different movies. So I love Ginger Snaps 1 for what it is. It's amazing. It's iconic. But so is Ginger Snaps 2 for what it is. And it's Bridget's story, and I think it's super important, and it's Ghost's story. I would really like to see it continued. Like I said, I love the, you know, psychiatric environment. I love how the tone is super off and, like, kind of bleak. I love the acting, the set, the creature design. And for that reason, it's a slay. Colton, we've been waiting.
I'm just happy that I no longer will have to be referred to as the Ginger Snaps hater on this podcast, because I agree that I would give this a yay as well. I'm not like nice. Emphatic about it, but it's just, I do think this is a decent step up in what I didn't like about the first one. Like, the first one I didn't hate. I gave it an okay still. It was just, like, once again, a lot of the tone and whatnot irritated me a bit. Whereas this one, as you've all mentioned, it's a completely different tone, or, you know, largely a different tone. I just preferred this tone. I didn't miss Ginger. I much preferred Ghost. I liked Bridget actually coming into her own as a character. I thought Emily Perkins' acting was a lot better. Practical effects were better. I like winter horror. So it was just, for a lot of it, I was just like, this is working for me. I will say that for a large part of the movie, I was like, it's still an okay for me. It's a strong okay. But it was also like, I thought it was going to end like in the rehab clinic, right? I didn't expect this to wind up in like a log cabin and it become like, oh, this is like actually winter horror at the end. So yeah. Like, once they got out of that, I was completely into the third act and all the revelations with Ghost and, you know, all that stuff. I very much enjoyed, I thought it ended very strong. Even if I was kind of confused about unreliable narrators and who's this werewolf and stuff for the first half, I liked how it all wound up in the end. So I'll give it a nice light yay, I would say, for Ginger Snaps 2. So yeah, Rowan, direct all your hate mail to Rowan this time.
Turns out that Colton pulled the rug out from under us.
I was gonna say, like, who's the wolf in sheep's clothing now?
Yeah, Rowan. No, there we go. Better metaphor. Yeah.
Even if I hated the third one, I'll have to come in and give it a slay just to.
Rowan's coming in and give it a slay because he knows I'm not going there. So
you know what? I think 3 A's a slay and an okay. I think that averages out to probably pretty good.
Pretty good.
So with that, we told you what we thought of the film and we asked you what you thought of it. And Rowan dropping the ball on this one and only posting the question like 4 hours before we started. So I will say this.
And usually I catch it, but yeah, it was Ginger Snap. So I lost power.
You hate women, Rowan.
I do hate women. I lost power yesterday, so I was dealing with that all night.
Excuses.
Yeah, forgot. I've been lots of editing. There's lots of episodes coming to you guys. So I'll say this. If you submit an answer after we're done recording this, next episode we'll make sure to get your opinions on this in. But we do have one that, automatically Horrorhound Holly wrote in with her opinions on this and said, I'm sorry, Jill.
No.
But did anything happen in this movie? ? Female empowerment? Check. Slow X equals okay.
She's with Rowan.
Holly, welcome.
Welcome to the haters club.
Welcome to the haters club.
She was nicer about it because she said female empowerment check. I'll take it. And she's still with me. I feel it.
She'll be back for Ginger Snaps 3. It's going to be a big slay on that one.
I'm glad to at least have a little bit of company in my very lonely boat. So, but with that, we will we'll go over to the horrific hotline and see what Horror Hound Nicholas had to say about Ginger Snaps.
Here we are with Ginger Snaps 2. And first off, I have to admit that I don't like it as much as the first one, or as much as I thought I would, remembering it, because I haven't seen it in ages. And back when I was a teenager, the movie was very shocking due to certain reveals, especially in the final act, that caught me off guard. Rewatching it now, it does not hold up as well, though I still think it is a very enjoyable movie, is entertaining. The clinic where most of the first half takes place is a great setting, and you get a few, not cool, that's the wrong way, a few interesting new characters that are somehow involved in the story.
I would say Ghost is cool.
A great addition. Yeah. So overall, I still like the movie, and I'm going to give it a weak yay because it did disappoint a little bit, because I think I remember it very fondly and it just wasn't quite that. Though I think it is still thrilling, but the overall greatness of the first movie, I know, I'm sorry, Colton, but the overall greatness of the first movie just isn't in the second one as strongly as I hoped it would be. And the mom is also not in the movie, like the mother of Ginger and her sister from the first movie, who's like the unanimously best character in any werewolf movie ever. So yay, but not the best.
Well, we disagree on the first movie, Nicholas, but we agree on the second. So, you know, we're back, you know.
Well, and hopefully he feels better. I know he said in his email that he's been sick all week. So he thought maybe he'd have to rewatch it for a third time in the last few weeks just to, you know, revisit, see if that yay was the best. And I know he just wanted to let us know that thank you for making him rewatch so many of his teenage classics. Aww. So apparently this was a teenage classic for him.
That is so sweet.
As I've said, I didn't watch this, obviously, as a teen. So you know, I don't share that. But if you want to be like Nicholas and send us a voicemail, you can do so at itslayspodcast@gmail.com, or you can just message us on one of our social medias, send us an MP3, and we'll make sure that it makes the air. And if you're not following us already, you can do so on our socials at itslayspodcast. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Slasher, Letterboxd, Threads, Blue Sky. If there's a social media, we're probably there at itslayspodcast. And if you want to help support the show, like our horror hounds, Holly, Nicholas, Patrick, Mark, Stephen, Joy, Carvey, Dan, Brian, Trevor, and Genesis, gain access to the Patreon-exclusive show Stream Screams, hosted by Jill, and get episodes of this here main show 48 hours early. Be sure to head on over to patreon.com/itslayspodcast and choose whatever tier works best for you. Rowan, there's not too many jams in this movie. I don't know if anything's going to make the playlist or not, but...
Yeah, well, as always, we'll have to check it out. Maybe Jill will find something.
The song at the end... for the credits, banger.
Banger?
Yeah.
It's like Beautiful Like You or something. I don't know.
Maybe we'll have to look at that. But yeah, go to Spotify to the It Slays Podcast Horrific Playlist. If you have any problems finding it, you can go to any of the social media that Colton just mentioned. Click the Linktree link in the bio to take you directly there. We upload licensed music or scores from iconic horror movies we review, or just horror movies we love. So yeah, go take a listen, follow it, and get your spooky music on, because why the hell not? But all that is left is to announce the upcoming episode, and we've got another themed month, which is April Ghouls. You know, ask us what a ghoul is, don't, because it's been an argument.
Do not ask us what a ghoul is.
It's been an argument what a ghoul is, but we do know for sure... who is a ghoul, which is going to be our first pick of the month, which is Beetlejuice. So, you know, get that into your eye holes for the next episode, and we will be back in 2 weeks. As always, thank you for all the support. I'm your humble host, Rowan.
Bye, it's Mike.
I'm Colton.
Bye, it's Jill.
You're starting to figure it out, aren't you? How it all starts innocently enough. Today you want to fuck him, tomorrow you just want to bite a hole in his sternum.